Thanks very much, Melissa. One from one Queenslander to the other. I'm going to be talking about an amazing, fantastic study from Queensland, and I think it fits really nicely with the speakers that we've had so far, where this is a qualitative study, and I'll be talking about some of the lived experiences of ageing. But first of all, I'd like to acknowledge the traditional custodians of the land in which we meet here today, the Wadjuk and Ngarrindjeri people, pay my respects to elders past, present and emerging, and acknowledge Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people in the room today. I also would like to acknowledge people living with HIV, in particular the participants of our research and partners involved in our research, who so generously shared their lived experience with us to improve the lives of all people living with HIV. And I'd like to take the time from this study to acknowledge the six participants of the LPQ study who died during the course of the study, and their voices will be heard through the study and the publications that are going to be made. It's just really, really important to acknowledge them. And the co-authors and partners, and I would particularly like to acknowledge Chris Howard from QPP, who's always been just the best supporter of our research, and Alison Much, who has been doing a lot of the research with me. So what is the Living Positive in Queensland study? It's a qualitative longitudinal study which has explored the social determinants of ageing and health, in particular locality, housing, precarity, stigma. I'll look at my, a bit hard to look at it there, so I'll come this way. Stigma, social support, social isolation, access to services and support. It was a ARC linkage grant, so it was developed in partnership with key HIV-related organisations in Queensland, as well as Queensland Health. So Queensland Positive People and the work of Chris and others really, really informed the development of the study, the questions that we wanted to focus on. And it's interesting that the study was developed about 8 years ago, and the issues of ageing were coming up in the Queensland context, in particular issues around social isolation, marginalisation. It's really a really interesting study in a way that it's a natural experiment. Being qualitative and longitudinal, we can follow people over time. So what we've been able to do is explore people living with HIV over time through, in Queensland, a time of significant policy and service provision change, through the times of the cuts to health promotion and sexual health services and the defunding of psychosocial services for people living with HIV, and to see what that means in the lived experience of people. It's also following people through a time of significant change in the biomedicalisation and prevention of HIV and looking at what impact that has on people living long-term with HIV and ageing. We're using a longitudinal life course approach, and what we're able to do is to examine the cumulative impact of poverty over time, of ill health, and complex lived experiences. And we're really, really focused on everyday strengths and resiliences as well of people. So our longitudinal research is qualitative. We explored the people in this time of change, as I've said before, and we wanted this temporal context. So looking at changes over time is really, really important. All the interviews were face-to-face. We traversed the length and breadth of Queensland multiple times, and that's fantastic because what we've developed is amazing trust and rapport and relationships with all our participants. We've conducted over 200 in-depth interviews over the last 5 years, and we've had no loss to follow-up apart from death. So it's a really incredible, amazing project that we have only just started to tap into. I can't stress how amazing this project is. So what we did, we followed 73 participants, interviewed them all, and then over time we had a small loss to follow up, but interviewed them 3 times over 5 years, 62 men, 11 women. We also have a really good Indigenous cohort as well. Age ranges from 34 to 75. Living with HIV from 4 to 35 years. Over 60% had been living with HIV for over 15 years. Most of our participants in this study were doing it tough. Most were living on a disability support pension, and a majority were either renting or in public housing, and most of our participants didn't have partners, were living alone and that sort of thing as well. And we've got down here, you can see decades of diagnosis. So we have a lot of the, I forget what you call them, the first generation, the pioneers, 33 pioneers. Their stories are so important for us to hear. And then we also have post-heart. And we have a small number of more recently diagnosed people who were ageing as well, and they're an important group not to forget. There we go. All right, so our participants we've described as really Queensland's rough sailors. If you know the article that's come out of Futures, there's this notion of different types of people living with HIV, and a small percentage are described as rough sailors. Were they about 15%? I've forgotten. 5%, okay. So we're highlighting most vulnerable, most marginalised people that participated in this study, and that's really important. So, our participants, they were really diverse. They had a intersectionality of identities, so, you know, ethnic identities, gender, all those sorts of things, age and that sort of thing, and that's really important. So it wasn't just about living with HIV, but an intersectionality of identities and what that meant. What we saw was enormous resiliency, amazing resiliency, but that's in tension with what we saw sometimes was quite extreme suffering. We saw the complex interaction of multiple comorbidities, including mental health, and disabilities, limited resources, a lot of social stigma, and we were able to witness, because we followed people longitudinally, the accumulation of health issues interconnected with the social determinants of health, which we like to call, and people have heard this before, the recursive cascade. So social determinants of health impact on your health, and your poor health impacts on your social determinants of health, and it becomes this recursive cascade. And we witnessed this in the study. What we saw was social isolation and loneliness, limited social and interpersonal resources, fragile social networks. And for those who had the most limited social networks and who were socially isolated, how much they relied on formal networks for social supports at a time when those formal networks had been cut with a lot of cuts to funding. But again, everyday strengths and resiliences were so important. To highlight one of our participants, Tom, to illustrate the sort of people that we were talking to, this is Tom, and over the course of the study, he was aged between 68 and 72. He'd been positive at the first interview for over 30 years, and he was still recovering and talking about his life partner who had died of AIDS many years previously. He was living in social housing. He was on a government pension. He lived alone. And what we saw over the time of the study was really increasing complex comorbidities over the 4 years that we conducted interviews with Tom, and increasing frailty, absolutely. And you can see this is the list, and he allowed us to take a photograph of his polypharmacy that he was grappling with and dealing with, just to highlight the complexities of issues that he was dealing with. But again, enormous resilience. I get down in a bit of depression, but I'm up now. I only grieve for one day at a time, and I'm back on the boat. I've got a career, it's my health. I work at not having negative thoughts. HIV aspect doesn't bother me at all in comparison with that. The issues he was really dealing with was the comorbidities and having to deal with the complexity of those and navigating an extremely complex health system with limited transportation, living in social housing with really, really steep stairs, and being really, really worried that he would have to leave his home. It was great concern. So just a few, because I haven't got much time, we could talk all day about the study, but some of the key things that came out about ageing that our participants talked about. Invisibility. They were really, really keen to stress that ageing with HIV was invisible in terms of, with the increasing focus on the biomedicalisation of HIV, people living older and ageing with HIV, our participants talked about, they felt they were invisible. They talked about invisibility due to social isolation in regional and rural settings, exacerbated by stigma, a lot of perceived stigma, precarity, poor health. They just talked a lot about ageism experienced in both gay and HIV cultures. And this is really important, I think, the invisibility of the complexities of managing life, living long-term with HIV, and managing comorbidities, managing that chronicity, and managing also social precarity and that sort of thing. And here's a quote, which I won't read out of Hugh, articulating these things, that this complex and not a nice story is often hidden and invisible. So there we go. The next thing that we want to talk about is uncertainty, and I think we've already discussed this in this session, but our participants talked about enormous uncertainty and ambivalence about ageing. And the participants who had been diagnosed for a long time and had lived through the pre-hard era, they had lived with uncertainty and ambivalence for a long time. And they, like you talked about, John, participants were talking about sort of having to deal with that again as they aged with HIV. and kind of grappling with the debates surrounding the adverse impacts of HIV and ageing, those discourses, and their own unknown futures. And also associated with that was uncertainty about the social determinants of successful ageing. There was a lot of uncertainty and fear about poverty, housing, and access to care. Again, exemplified in regional and rural locations where that was pretty tough. Another thing that participants talked about was the fear of loss of agency and control. And this is, in particular, some of the most older patients with the most complex health issues who had really fragile social networks, limited support. They talked a lot about really fearing loss of agency and control and talked about the future, about not wanting to be a burden on others, not wanting to be a burden on the health system, but also wanting to retain some control over themselves and their own life and their own death. So sort of lacking confidence in care options. This group talked a lot about their backup plans, which included going off treatment, treatment refusal, non-adherence, or suicide. And I just it's actually quite a number of this cohort. And this is Tom, who we saw previously. I don't want to get to a stage where people have to wipe my bum and that's time to check out. I don't have a safety net. I know then if things become unbearable, there's an exit. I'll stop a couple of pills. It's an escape hatch if things become unbearable. But this is a really key theme that came out that I think we need to acknowledge and think about what we can do to support these most highly fragile people. All our participants talked about apprehension of aged care. I think one participant out of the 72 had plans of retirement and the future because most of our participants were living on welfare, most of our participants were long-term diagnosed and had been living in poverty for a long, long time, and the cumulative impacts of that burden meant that they didn't have plans for aged care, plans for retirement, all that sort of thing. Many were really, really anxious about their capacity to live in the future. They didn't recognise home-based care at all. Most thought that care for older people was in residential care, and they were worried about the stigma and discrimination they might experience, having experienced stigma and discrimination in healthcare settings previously. Just looking at what time I've got. It's really important to highlight the amazing resilience that our participants have and the active agency that they talk about in their lives. They were all working really hard on themselves to get through day by day. Most of that resiliency, and we're grappling with this, and it's great, but it's problematic at the same time, because resiliency for our participants was highly individualised. It was getting through the day, highly individualised practices. So doing your art therapy, colouring in books so that you can do your meditation. When you're in a hospital bed in a studio near a beach but not being able to see the water, turning off your washing machine and doing washing by buckets to get through the day to stop your depression, highly resilient and you know, great, but it's highly individualised, and I think that's problematic in a way. Our participants talked a lot about generativity and the importance of that, wanting to give back, wanting to share their stories to the younger generations of people living with HIV and the broader Australian society, wanting to volunteer, wanting to share their experiences. But in the Queensland context at the time, these opportunities had come lessened due to defunding of some services and the kind of, at the same time, fracturing of communities that happened around defunding. So different groups and different communities weren't talking to each other at the time, and our participants really felt the impact of that, this fracturing of communities at the time, though there's a lot of great things have been happening since then. So just to, again, we could talk about this for ages. I've got 1 minute left. Points of discussion, not conclusions, because we're only at the start of our analysis of this magnificent study. I think we have 220 interviews. Amazing studies and life histories and following people over time. And we want money to continue this cohort on, because I think what we have here is gold. But what I want to say, I'm a sociologist, that ageing, and Jennifer, you said this too, that ageing isn't just a physical thing, it's biosocial, and we can't forget that. It's lived within diverse intersections of embodied experiences of HIV, generational differences, social and locational contexts. Generativity came out really strongly in our study, that opportunity to share wisdom to support other people living with HIV, that need for recognition, respect, and support for our participants. This focus on biomedicalisation of HIV, individualised approaches to care, to funded services, kind of in HIV is similar to discourses around ageing and successful ageing, which are also highly individualised. So those successful ageing discourses sort of sit with biomedicalised discourses around HIV. And with those individualised discourses, what we're seeing in our study is a sort of fracturing and dismantling of a community networks of collective help and aid and support for people. So a lot of the community networks that had once served as a resource for care had been fractured in the Queensland context. And I want to just raise the point, where is the collective support for older people living with HIV? For the first generation, for those amazing people that took the medications and things. My colleague and I have just written a chapter looking at the history of HIV policy in Australia as a form of successful public policy, and it was on the backs of collective coming together and working collectively. And I just want to kind of chuck this out, is where's the collective support for the participants that we see across Queensland that are living alone in sheds and in social housing, extremely socially isolated? Successful ageing isn't individual, it's relational, and social connection matter, and that's where we need to be putting our focus, and we've been talking to Chris about that. So what can we do? And John, you brought up great stuff and things. Cost-effective, social, peer support, HIV and ageing literacy for people living with HIV to help with that uncertainty, and for healthcare providers and social support, quality and culturally competent aged care services, and coordination and partnership between disability aged care sectors and the HIV community. And just to finish with, because it comes across, we do an array of social research in Queensland. Stigma just remains such a key issue, is imbued in all the experiences that I've been talking about, and just the need to never forget that. On the dot.